Welcome to Upvote, a politics podcast from Wired Now's Technical UK. Each week until the election, we discussed the increasingly important relationship between politics and technology, which more and more is coming to define 21st century life. We talked about fake news and the influence of social media. We spoke to activists, academics, and one member of the House of Lords. And no one, but no one, thought this would happen. I'm Roland Manthorpe, Associate Editor of Wired.
And I'm Kelly Fiveash, News Editor of Ars Technica.
It's about 11 o'clock, Friday 9th of June, the day after an utterly incredible night in British politics. Against all the odds and most of the polls, Jeremy Corbyn, yes, has led Labour to an incredible, although it should probably be said not winning, 261 seats. Theresa May, supposed to be Thatcher in 1983, instead looks more like Major in 1996. Although, there are developments happening even as we speak. Just before we came in, it emerged that Theresa May will go to the palace at 12:30, believing she can form a government, apparently having struck a deal with the DUP. Although, as I say, all this is moving very fast. Labour would also like to has suggested it would also like to form a minority government, perhaps on a conference and supplier basis. But before we look ahead to what might happen, we should reflect on what truly was an astonishing night. And to do that, we're joined by Alex DePledge, who's a two-time entrepreneur. She founded the cleaning company Hassel, you might have heard of that, before moving on to a new venture called Buildpath. And she's also the chair of the tech lobbying group, Codec. So, Alex, last night, you said you stayed up most of the night. Thoughts, impressions, how was it? Where were you watching it? Were you at home?
Yeah, so I actually got invited to the Institute of Directors to watch it there, and I thought that it would be so uneventful in the early stages that I'd go home, get a couple of hours sleep and get up early at 3. But then I saw the exit polls, and that I was like, hang on a minute. Because I think, honestly, having tracked this quite closely, I did think that, I first of all thought that she had run a very disastrous campaign, but then I also thought that she could have intentionally done that to go into the polls as a bit more of an underdog and make sure she got out the Tory vote. Which, if you look at the number of Tory people that came out and voted Tory across the country, it's actually quite a large majority. I mean, it's on par with like someone like Tony Blair. It just didn't translate into winning seats. So I thought I was a bit undecided as to whether the exit poll was true or not. But once it had come out, I was like, oh, I can't go to bed now.
Yeah, I think, well, I definitely felt the same thing, working on about 2 hours sleep. Kelly, you got an hour, didn't you?
I managed an hour, yeah. I just couldn't leave it alone. It just kept dragging me back in. I was like, sleep, no, watch the telly.
I know, something might happen. Yeah, I went to bed after Amber Rudd.
Okay.
So, yeah, I got a few hours. If you're listening to this and it's complete gibberish,
then
it's because we're all hallucinating.
Yes.
But anyway, so conventional wisdom says that campaigns don't matter, young people don't vote, and that technology, insofar as it influences people, does through mainly through the medium of Facebook ads. None of that happened. Instead, the campaign seemed to be hugely impactful. Young people turned out in what appears to be enormous numbers, and all this talk about technology, the secret influence of Cambridge Analytica, none of it transpired. If you look back at the last three elections that we've had, Trump, Macron, and this one, the big predictor of who would win was actually rallies. How many people were they getting at their rallies? And it's interesting, Momentum have just said that they had a really big get out of the vote operation in a traditional sense, knocking on doors, all that kind of thing. I think the first moment that I thought that maybe something was happening, though, was on WhatsApp, when someone added me to the biggest WhatsApp group in the entire world. And it was just full of people saying, oh yeah, vote, 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 get out the vote, all for Corbyn.
And that's the thing then, Momentum have been well organised online, haven't they? But it's also about being on foot and getting out there and talking to people.
Yeah, well, I think this idea that elections are going to be fought digitally is a bit of an... It is true to a certain extent, but it doesn't encompass the whole picture. I think the digital component is important for connecting to people, but once that connection's made, it then has to translate into some sort of human contact. And I think that's why rallies are the predictor now, is that people are using WhatsApp, Facebook, Twitter to galvanise like-minded people and then pull them into some kind of like face-to-face. I mean, you only have to look at the marches for and against Brexit. before and after the referendum, that's, you know, we've never really had this much protest. If you, I mean, it's peaceful, but we haven't had this much protest really since the poll tax. People actually getting out and saying, I'm not happy. And like, I go back to this, it's a broader trend of people are not happy with regressive politics. And we've had regressive politics in this country now for the past 7 years. And actually, Corbyn and May were both campaigning on a regressive platform. Corbyn back to the 1970s with nationalisation, and May in some world of autocracy where she wants to intervene in the energy markets and bring back grammar schools. Like, these two people were not representing the millennials or the Generation Xers or you know, the people like us that actually want to be thinking about, well, in 40 years time when automation, or even 20 years time when automation's taken away or augmented a lot of the jobs that we've got, what are people going to be doing? Like, what does that world look like? How do benefits work? How does employment work? No one is thinking about these questions. No one is thinking about how do we preserve and protect and make sure AI is used for good only, rather than, we can all know that, you know, AI can just be as bad in terms of autonomous weapons falling into the wrong hands. No one's thinking about this stuff. And it's like, I just want to get all MPs into a room and scream in their face, when are you going to start listening? I don't know how many times you have to tell them till they're blue in the face, but they just do not recognise technology as a sector that is actually the engine for growth for this economy, and is going to drive all of the regulation that we need to put around it.
On that point, we've had the Tories talking about regulating the internet more. You know, that was one of the pledges in their manifesto. Also, of course, they've been in government for 7 years and they've been making similar noises for a while. And we've seen things like the Digital Economy Acts just come in just recently. So, you know, there's the implementation of that once whoever it is forms a government. So what's your thoughts on the kind of regulation that we're going to see now? And does any of that help the tech world, or is it just going to hinder it more?
Look, I think, you know, when I talk about tech needing regulation, I sound like a turkey voting for Christmas, and I'm fully aware of that. But if you talk to some of the like really innovative minds in the UK that are working on drones and on, you know, artificial intelligence and big data solutions, they will tell you exactly the same thing, which is this stuff can be dangerous, and we actually need people thinking very cleverly about the way that we regulate. So, for example, at the moment, tort law, criminal law, will only be able to find conviction against the developer that has created an algorithm, for example. But that's nigh on impossible when these things are trained algorithms or when they're self-learning. You can't trace that back. So our current legal system's not set up to deal with artificial intelligence. And so, you know, very few people are thinking in that way. So when May comes out and starts going, we're going to become the home for regulation, I instantly get cold as ice, because they fundamentally don't understand. You know, at the end of the day, we shouldn't be taking down Facebook and Google through regulation. We should be thinking about antitrust in a different way in a digital age. Like, when people buy and sell companies, the primary thing that they look at is how big is this company pre-acquisition and then post-acquisition. Well, that makes no sense in a world where our five biggest companies are digital companies, and actually their real worth is driven by the data that they have. So why are we not looking at antitrust from a data asset perspective? So it's all this type of stuff that you don't hear politicians talking about. You hear them saying, we need to break WhatsApp's encryption. Well, why? Why would you be breaking WhatsApp's encryption? That's just going to make us all more unsafe, because then all we're doing is creating a backdoor for everyday hackers to come in and terrorise us through stealing our funds or our identity. And meanwhile, all of the real terrorists will be underground or on a, you know, in the dark web, or using a completely different communication channel. It just shows a fundamental lack of understanding in the government. And it's not just the government. I mean, the parties, MPs. And I mean, why would they? Most of them have never run a business. Most of them have never worked in technology. And yet, do we see an open dialogue happening? No, we don't. We see a closed shop run by five people in Downing Street. I mean, I think it's pretty scandalous. So maybe not everyone will agree with me, but I think that I'm hopeful that whatever happens at the back of this election, we get a more open dialogue for all industries with government, because they need the expertise to understand how to make the policy.
On the politics of it, David Cameron was very open to the tech industry. Tech entrepreneurs were always going into Downing Street. You supported him. You signed the open letter that went around saying,
yeah.
I think 90 entrepreneurs supported that. And that seemed to be the pretty consensus view, that tech went with the Cameron conservative line. Theresa May hasn't been so friendly has she?
No, because I think what Theresa May did is she came in and she sort of out with everything Cameron, you know, out with armchair or sofa politics, out with big business, out with technology. And I think there was just too much out. And actually, there was some of that should have been retained. And I mean, yes, I did sign the letter for David Cameron, but I did that more out of like, if there'd have been a box in 2015 that said coalition, that would have been who I would have voted for, because I'm a very much a centre ground person. And I think it's no surprise that actually the tech community has come out in favour of the Liberal Democrats, if it's come in favour of anyone, because they had actually the most progressive agenda. Unfortunately, they didn't necessarily, I think, have the kind of firepower in terms of brilliance within the party. But then actually I look at the Labour Party and think, you know, who are the shining stars? Maybe Chucker, maybe Yvette. I look at the Tory Party.
Jeremy.
Jeremy. JC.
Yeah, the young people love him. Mm-hmm. He's speaking to crowded rallies. This guy's a rock star.
And you know what? And he seems like a nice fella, but he's a relatively inept politician. And I think that, and you know,
inept politician who's just taken his party to a gigantic comeback.
But so what you have to ask yourself there is, were people holding their nose and voting for Jeremy Corbyn because they wanted to prevent May getting a landslide majority, or were they voting for Jeremy Corbyn because they wanted to see Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister? Many of the people that I spoke to were trying damage limitation. Nobody wants a hard Brexit, as far as I can tell, or if they do, it's in a very small Etonian old white male circle. And I think a lot of people, I mean, look, I voted for Chucker. He's my constituency MP in Streatham. I think he's done an outstanding job. That's the first time I voted Labour since I was 18 years old, and I'm now 36. And I did it because he deserves to be returned to Parliament, because he's a very smart centrist Labour politician. And I think a lot of people looked at this as a, okay, I don't like Theresa and I don't like Corbyn, but I have to vote because it's a civic duty. So let's look at my constituency MP and who's relatively sensible and vote for them. And there's a lot of tactical voting as well.
Right now, there's a small team in Downing Street deciding what to do about their party and the country in general. You actually know this team, don't you? You've had some contact with them. What was that like?
So I did have dinner with Nick, Timothy and Fiona Hill, and actually they're very lovely people, and it was a very interesting conversation because they're clearly very bright, but what I would say, and you know, again, like, I shoot myself in the foot for any kind of influence or favours by saying this, but they're obsessed with immigration. In fact, her whole team has spent the last 7 years in the Home Office, seeing some pretty horrible things, you know, human trafficking, sex slavery, you know, refugees. I'm not saying that they're innately bad people, but in terms of making you a cynical person, there's no better place to go. And so they become obsessed by control of immigration flows. And if you look at the deal that David Cameron came back with right before the referendum, that gave us a lot of control over, you know, our sort of benefits that were being given to immigrants that were coming in. And I think truly, actually, if I look at immigration, whether you're pro or anti, the one thing that we could do is actually put in a proper system that allows us to track who comes in and out. Because right now, it's done by that survey that you take at the airport when you're leaving. That literally is how we get all of our immigration statistics, which in a digital age confounds me, how we can build all these policies that have really wide-reaching effects on our social fabric, on our economic growth, based on a fucking exit survey. Really?
That's the tech company answer to everything, isn't it? More tracking.
More efficiency, I think. And transparency is where I would go with that.
Actually, that's a really good point. Maybe we could start a business selling Facebook ads to new immigrants, targeting them really precisely because we're tracking them with maybe a wearable device.
Maybe.
I'm sure in a year's time we'll be seeing the launch of that device. But on Facebook, on the campaign, one interesting report that's just come out is about what went on the campaign on Facebook about Brexit. There was very little debate about Brexit. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting that was one feature, wasn't it? We didn't really talk that much about Brexit, but there it was in the background. What does all this mean, do you think, for Brexit going forward?
Well, it doesn't look good, does it, if we're really honest? You know, in 11 days' time, we start negotiation, mm-hmm. and if we have the same government, so if May manages to get a Queen's Speech through Parliament and is the Prime Minister going in there, well, the Europeans are going to be having a field day, because she's not come out with that mandate that she personally put her reputation on the line for. She's come out without a majority, going into what is going to be some tough negotiations. But you know what? She's only got herself to blame, because one, she took a very hard line coming out of, you know, to say that she was meant to be a Remainer, took a very hard line on what she, out of the customs union, out of the single market. Again, back to my original point, because it's all about control of people, which, if you'd have got rid of that and there'd have been some bending on exactly how we came up with the right immigration, sensible policy, then we could have stayed in, you know, we could have been Norway, we could have stayed in the customs union, stayed in the single market. And I actually think she'd have probably carried an awful lot more centre ground support and left less room for Corbyn to come in and sort of woo people. Because don't forget, the young people wanted to stay in Europe more than anybody else.
But I mean, it seems like the tactic was to scoop up the UKIP, like the collapsed UKIP
that
vote,
failed.
And the assumption that Labour just wouldn't be anywhere here. And yeah, clearly she's failed on both points. So the question has to be, is she going to survive?
Well, I mean, her MPs are coming out in favour and saying, you know, we support Theresa to run the country, even on a coalition, quote unquote, with the DUP. How that will change, though, as we go into those negotiations and she comes back with some bad news, I can just see the right of the party being like, they're just sort of like dogs in waiting, ready to come out on attack. And if they don't like it, you know, it's a very strong machine, the Conservative Party. And I just wonder if heads will roll. My concern with that, honestly, is that we get Bojo.
Possibly.
Yeah, I mean, and that guy's a complete joke. I'm sorry, I really respected him when he was mayor, and he's actually, when he was mayor, and he's, at, oh God, I sound so northern, mayor. When he was mayor.
That's better. That's better. That's how we set it down here.
Exactly. Sorry, you could tell I'm an import. But then I just think his behaviour throughout the Leave campaign and his behaviour since he's become Foreign Secretary is, how can we take somebody like that credibly? I mean, he's literally going to be our Trump. So that
first
is my concern.
First is tragedy, then is farce.
Yeah. And what's really upsetting is actually there's some really bright stars in the Conservative Party. I mean, I like Ed Vasey, big fan. Matt Warman, who just took Boston and Skegness and saw off Paul Nuttall. You know, these guys are like, they're bright people. And it's a shame that the Tory party still remains dominant, you know, kind of controlled by a handful of really powerful people, because I don't think everything's bad in it. I just think that they've got this really annoying right wing that they should probably spin off.
I think you touched on it earlier as well. It seems like May's team are very focused on kind of still behaving like they're in the Home Office, and a lot of their policy is driven by that, and it really lacks kind of cohesive leadership
completely
across government,
and none
just
of her team.
So odd.
Yeah, and none
so
of her
negative.
Team. Yeah, exactly. And I think also Corbyn ran a very positive campaign, which went in his favour. And again, going back to that point about her team, you know, five people cannot run a country. It's impossible. It's like it's the same in a company, and none of those people have run a company. So I just found that they were. I don't think they were anti-business, but I just don't think they necessarily understood it. And unfortunately for Corbyn, as he's going to have to realise, and both of them need to realise that if you want to redistribute wealth, if you want to make our NHS better, you want to be teaching our kids the right things in school, our economy has to grow. And none of them had a recipe for how we generate and stimulate economic growth. None of them talked about it. The answer was, oh, well, we're going to have a growing economy. Really? Well, how? Because not only are we going into the self-inflicted wound of Brexit, but take that aside, you have to have a plan. You have to understand economics 101 about growth. So to me, that was really, really absent in the campaign, as well as the acknowledgement around my sector. Obviously, I'm here. I've got to bring it back to technology, which is, you know, businesses like mine, startups, they're not SMEs. Equally, scale-ups like Deliveroo or TransferWise, they are not corporates. There's a whole different third category of business that no one talks about in the media, that the politicians don't talk about. And it's this high digital growth sector that contributed 13% of the GDP. It's growing four times faster than any other part of our economy. And yet it's relatively unknown, it's misunderstood, and no one talks about it in the right terms. So if we can't even acknowledge and understand it, how are we ever going to regulate, police, create policy for it, encourage it, make it grow? And that those two things, like a lack of understanding about how we were going to get economic growth, and also how we, you know, this this body, this huge part of our economy, you know, much bigger than car manufacturing. Those two things for me were massively absent, as well as, like you say, this idea of like, what's Brexit going to look like? It wouldn't surprise me if Corbyn and May just said, well, let's just not talk about it.
Well, in fact, that was Jeremy Corbyn's strategic masterstroke, to not really have a strong position on Brexit. I mean, when it all happened, a lot of Remainers were really, really angry with Corbyn, really wanting him to come out and take the Lib Dem position and strongly campaign for Remain and fight the election on that basis. Instead, he campaigned quite limply for Remain. Then he ordered his MPs to vote for Article 50. And somehow being in the middle and not really having a position turned out to be a stroke of total genius. But what all this means for the hard choice of Brexit is anyone's guess. Yeah. I mean, that is quite worrying, I think, in some ways, that we haven't had this real debate. Because, say, for example, one total trade-off, it appears to be between immigration and the economy, especially for the tech sector, which is so powered by immigration. I mean, I'm very... Because, Alex, I'm really interested to know... you've run a big company that is employing a lot of people on, I'd say, relatively low wages... Mm-hmm. This wasn't talked about that much in the campaign, but it was, I think, a central plank of Corbyn's manifesto, especially around with the minimum wage and everything. I mean, what do you think this result means for that group?
So first of all, you know, I want to say that like our cleaners were self-employed, and there we come to our first obstacle, right? Which is, again, Corbyn's thinking about this in terms of a black and white. You have employed people and you have self-employed people. Well, actually, that's not really the way that the world works anymore. And I think you can see that, you know, we've got the Taylor review underway where he's looking at this idea of the gig economy and the 0 hours contracts and everything else. And like, listen, I'm all in favour of more rights for the gig economy workers. But until we change our laws around what is an employee and what is a self-employed person, as a company, Deliveroo couldn't, for example, right now, give their drivers sick pay. Because the minute that they do that, they're classified as employees.
Yeah, so because I've heard this before, Deliveroo actually can't give their riders helmets because that would mean they were classified as employees.
Just like I couldn't give my cleaners training of any description or uniforms or
any... So all this is for a given definition of couldn't.
But are you trying to say that we didn't want to?
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a very strange situation, isn't it, when Deliveroo, you're seeing all those riders riding all over the place and they don't have helmets, and Deliveroo is saying, oh, we just can't.
But by law, if they do that, they're putting themselves more into the employer category and everything that goes with that, which I'll hold my hands up. Some Uber drivers, some Hassle.com cleaners, some Deliveroo riders will want to be employees. But honestly, it is a very small minority. Cleaners wanted to clean for Hassle.com because we gave them a plentiful supply of leads for customers because they chose their own hours. They could take their kids to school, clean a couple of houses, pick them up, and they got £9 an hour. And now actually they get the London Living Wage. So that's a choice that 80-90% of those people are making. But our laws prohibit companies from taking care of the contract workers on those platforms. And that's exactly where I go back to this idea that no one is coming up with progressive policies that would create like a third way between employers and employees, workers and contract platforms like mine. And ultimately, and this sounds very cynical, but from my interactions with the Taylor Review, the only reason that is going on is not because they actually care that much about the workers, but because we have a diminishing tax base and we want to see how we can increase that, which I get from an economic point of view. But, you know, I don't think a Tory or a Labour government is going to do any better for that sector of the economy, because I just don't think they fundamentally understand that the way the world of work is changing, and it's going to accelerate as we go forward.
But I mean, we're also seeing in Europe, with the Uber example, this whole discussion about whether or not they're a platform, and in fact they're offering a service, and you know, so there's also that kind of murky debate going on, if you like.
Completely. And look, I'm not here as a cheerleader for Uber by any stretch of the imagination. Like, I think some of the stuff that's going on in that company is terrible. And I think each platform or gig economy platform, you have to look at what they're bringing those people from and to. So from Hassle.com's point of view, we were taking cleaners that were working in the black market, getting paid cash in hand, sometimes in unsafe environments, you know, sometimes without getting paid because, you know, people would forget and then not pay them. We were bringing that all into the open in a transparent fashion, in a safe fashion. I would have thought that HMRC would have been shaking me by the hand and being like, brilliant, like I've got this database full now of people that are earning money as self-employed people, you know, that can be taxed if they make the threshold. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, we seem to have politicians that don't appreciate the change that's going on, or that don't want to sort of grab it with two hands and think, actually, some of this stuff is good. Let's work out how we can help it in a safe fashion. You know, I would have happily wanted to pay my holiday, my cleaner's holiday pay. There's lots of ways you can do that around mutuals and insurance, but you can't do that if the law stays in a rigid definition.
Have you had meetings with Labour? Do they reach out to you and say, listen, we want to understand this tech stuff. Tell us.
No, I've not. I don't know. I mean, so I know Sadiq Khan because I sit on the London LEP. But
oh,
we, I mean, we
Sadiq.
Don't. I know, bless him. And Ian Wright was one of my favourite MPs, and he didn't stand again. He was the head of the business committee. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessary. I also think, though, as well, that a lot, you know, with cuts all over the place and the civil service shrinking, MPs, some of the MPs actually do want to understand, they do want to learn, but they've got so much on their plate and there's so much that they've got to try and achieve. It's quite a tall order. And let's be honest, like, would you want to be an MP? It's a thankless task. No, you know, no matter what you do, no one's ever happy. You don't get paid that much. If you think about it, £70,000, £80,000. Think about it, you could earn that entry-level job in, you know, in the city. So it's no surprise, really, that actually a lot of our brightest people don't go into politics. It's quite off-putting.
So there is going to be a new government at some point. Maybe there'll be another election, but eventually we'll arrive somewhere. What can I say three things will you be going in and asking for? And who do you think you'll be asking?
Yeah, okay, so this is where Romilly Dennis, the executive director of Codec, is probably shouting into the computer, please, Alex, be positive. You've been so negative. And that's not the impression I want to leave listeners with, because I think there's some very big bright spots on the horizon. And I mean, the first and foremost on the bright spots is that it doesn't really matter who's in government and what's going on in it, is entrepreneurs always find a way to build businesses and be successful. I think what I would be saying to government if they sat down with me, which after this they probably won't, is that we want to help. That actually we want to help, not just in help you understand who we are, what we're doing and what we need, and help with that economic growth that's going to enable that redistribution of wealth, it's going to enable that funding into the NHS. But also we want to help, like, innovate in the NHS, and we want to help innovate inside government and make it more efficient and take that workload off the civil servants so that they can do what they do best, which is, you know, thinking of policy and kind of hammering out that sort of detail. So I don't think it's all doom and gloom. I think the big ask from me is that they just need to start trusting us. I think sometimes there's a bit of ageism in there, where, you know, when you're like sort of 32 and you're going in and trying to say, oh, this is what we need, and there's some older people thinking, well, hang on a minute, weren't you just in, you know, nappies when I was your age? So I think first of all, they can trust us. Second of all, they have to recognise, you know, who we are and what we need, and be open to listening. But I think, you know, third of all, we're there to help. Like, and we actually genuinely want to help whoever forms a government, because I think if you're an entrepreneur, you can go. Like, you can go where and work wherever you want. There was a huge, you know, 10 years ago, most good entrepreneurs got up and they went to the Valley. We're not doing that anymore. We're staying in the UK. It's a good place to do business. We're staying in London or Manchester or Newcastle around. And we're here because we love our country and we want to make it great. So actually, they should extend the hand of friendship and bring us into the fold, because I think they could actually benefit more from, you know, us helping them than shutting us out. So... And I can't get away with this because I can see you looking at me. Who do I think is going to be in government? I think, honestly, I don't think, looking at the numbers, Jeremy Corbyn's going to be able to form a minority government if he's given the opportunity. And I actually don't think he will be given the opportunity, because I do think Theresa May will form a government with the backing of her party. And should that become wobbly, stop using that word, I think they'll just end up being in a leadership contest So yeah, not good news for us on the global front. I think we've embarrassed ourselves again, but I think, yeah, like I said before, I think politicians need to stop falling back on party politics and start thinking that we need some new fresh thinking about the challenges that lie ahead for the United Kingdom.
Well, as Roland mentioned earlier, the DUP is in the frame, obviously. There's 10 MPs there, and there's talk of a deal with the Tories to get it across the line, which is really interesting because all along we've had Theresa May saying, don't vote for a coalition of chaos, and now she's in a very interesting position. And again, just coming back to Brexit, I mean, you know, we've gone through this whole pain for weeks and weeks, and it's meant that the civil service has been really hampered in terms of trying to get their policy on that, which obviously feeds into everything we've been talking about, because they're going to be so preoccupied with getting that legislation to work, which is going to be an absolute nightmare. So, I mean, any takeaway on what you might expect there? I mean, you know, you're saying this is a great country, but are we becoming even more isolationist? And is that really damaging for the tech?
Well, I think, I mean,
tech sector.
I want to stand here and say, you know, the people voted. Brexit means Brexit. We should follow it through. But in my heart of hearts, like I unfortunately, I'm as honest as they come, and I just can't say that. I think it's a mistake. And the reason I think it is a mistake is I think that the 52% or 51.5% that voted for it, I think a chunk of those people were not voting on leaving the EU. Maybe I'm being naive here. Maybe they were voting on the fact that they didn't have a good job, or they were fed up of London and our, you know, and the fact that we think we're so superior and we act that way. Or I don't think we can be so sure about why we know those people voted the way that they did. And given the amount of upheaval and the amount of time it's going to take to negotiate this exit, I just can't help but thinking that it's such a wasted amount of emotional energy, political capital, economic capital, when actually we should be turning those minds and that effort to fixing the NHS, to growing the economy, to getting the right agenda in schools. I mean, do you know that we're like the bottom of Europe in literacy and maths? Like, there's just no words. Like, I just, and everyone's like, turn off the immigration tap. Like, great. But who's going to do everything while we fix what is essentially a generation away in our education system? And so I just think, you know, if you're sitting out there and you voted leave, like, I would love to know why you think it's worth all of that time and energy going into getting out of the European Union instead of fixing the actual things, domestic things that Europe has no input into. Doesn't control our NHS, doesn't control our education system, doesn't control our infrastructure, doesn't control our energy markets. Like, what is it we're actually leaving other than the freedom movement and the single market? Like, it just blows my mind.
And even on that, David Davis, chief Brexiteer, this morning was kind of hinting that maybe there needs to be a rethink on the single market. So,
hallelujah.
This could be interesting.
Well, if that is true, and that is an outcome of this election, then this election was worth it for me, because I just I don't know. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but that's the other thing as well. We'll never know what was right if we leave, and we'll never know if we stayed if it'd be better. But I just think that for me, I just think there are more important things to do with our nation, like fixing all of the above, than there is extracting ourselves from the European Union. And if it causes a rethink, then I think, or, you know, all of the underground movements, and believe me, there is a huge underground movement in the tech sector that, you know, a lot of people doing a lot of work in the back, in behind the scenes. And I know that's true in academic. It was everywhere. There was a lot of stuff going on beneath the surface. Then, you know, those guys have had a major impact. And I think when the dust settles, we'll probably find there was an awful lot of tactical voting. So while Jeremy Corbyn is singing from the rooftops, I think that's premature. I think people held their noses and voted for him. It's not a big win for Labour in my book.
Well, I guess we'll find out. We've really enjoyed covering this exhausting, strange, bizarre, surprising and confusing election over the last 6 weeks. We didn't get to discuss some of the things we talked about on the way, like security, the threat of Russian hacking. That didn't happen.
No, that tells you where we are in the pecking order, doesn't it? Like, we're so off the global stage at this moment, the Russians can't even be bothered.
I know, I feel a little bit offended. Like, guys, come on. We're worth it.
We're just a boggy island. No one's looking anymore. We've moved on.
And maybe that is the most profound truth that anyone has said in the last 6 weeks. We launched this as a bit of an experiment to see if people were interested. if you've been listening all along, thank you very much. We're going to carry on afterwards, just because the politics doesn't stop, but maybe on a less regular basis, probably every other week. But we'll let you know what we plan as it all comes out. In the meantime, Alex, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.
Kelly, thank you for everything.
My pleasure. Thank you, Roland. It's been fun.
It has been fun. Thank you all for listening. And for the moment, goodbye and good luck.